Hello, and welcome to episode 45 of the Planning Period Podcast, your Ed Break Room. I'm your host, Brad Treffler. This week on the show, I am joined by Chris Nessie. If you listen to any other education podcast, you almost definitely know Chris. He is the host of the House of Ed Tech, co-host of Podcast PD, creator of the Education Podcast Network, and producer of about five other podcasts as well. He's passionate about education, technology, and absolutely ed tech. Chris and I talk about podcasting, the many shows he's involved with, his years of work on House of Ed Tech. We talk about why New Jersey is the heart of education, which is weird, but it's true. The gap between the quote real world and the actual real world, providing resources to every student for what they want to be, the value of being bored, the importance of being creative and the creative process, authentic audiences. We really kind of go all over the place and it's quite wonderful. So sit back and enjoy episode 45 of the Planning Period Podcast, my interview with Chris Nessie. All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Planning Period Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Brad Treffler, and I am joined today by a man who, if you listen to education podcasts at all, definitely does not need an introduction, because whether he is on the show, the host of the show, one of the co-hosts, or the producer for the show, or you just listen to any of the number of shows that are part of his education podcast network, you've probably heard of Mr. Chris Nessie. How you doing today, man?
I am doing very well, Brad. First, let me say thank you for having me on the podcast. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you saying yes. It's, you know, it's been a long time coming. You know, it's, when I started the show, I had a list of guests in my head of like, oh, I want to talk to this person, this person, this person. And you've been on the list from the beginning, but I've kind of like, I feel like I've waited until I was more comfortable with my own show before I had you on. Cause as an experienced podcaster, I just really didn't want you to judge me. I think that's what it was.
I wouldn't have judged you, but not for nothing. You did tell me before we hit record that you had this list. And then you got through it, and then you came to me after you ran out of people. So
that's not quite true. No, but it's cool. I appreciate you being here. And for any of my guests who, you know, don't listen to any other podcasts, which seems unlikely, but if there are any out there who listen to nothing else, can you tell them a little bit about who you are and what it is you do?
Sure. So as Brad said, you know, my name is Chris Nessie, and some of you may know me, and you know, some of you may not, but I'm a high school teacher here in New Jersey. I've been teaching for, gosh, I think I'm coming up on, this will finish my 11th year in education. And I do count that from when I first student taught. So, you know, I'm in this game for a while. I am passionate about education. I am passionate about education technology. I've worked in middle schools. I've worked in high schools. And while currently working at a high school, I also teach at the college level.
Yeah, I thought that's really cool that you do Rutgers, right? Isn't that where you're at?
Yes, that's what delayed me from starting this conversation when we wanted to, because I was actually selected by a girl who I previously taught. She's on the women's lacrosse team, and she brought me as her favorite professor to bring your favorite professor to a game night. So I got to go on the field, be introduced. It was a lot of fun. But my big takeaway was, here's a young person who I taught, who I clearly made a positive impact on. And she thought enough of me to choose me for this, what I think is a really nice honor.
Yeah, that is really cool. Like that's an awesome thing. I, you know, in the high school equivalent, I have been at a number of senior nights with my students, but I haven't, none of them have ever asked me to walk, you know, go out there with them. So that's pretty cool. I would take that as an honor for sure.
And having been a PA announcer in a former life, it was nice to actually hear my name get called out on the field and not be the one saying the names.
Yeah, that is definitely a switch. For my audience, what shows out there, what podcasts do you have your fingers in right now?
That I listen to or that I actually pull the strings on?
That you pull the strings on, that you're involved with.
Sure. So I am the producer of the Google Teacher Tribe podcast, hosted by Matt Miller of Ditch That Textbook fame and Casey Bell from ShakeUpLearning.com. I also produce the Assist Learning podcast, hosted by Jennifer Kronk. And I have my hand in one that comes out a little less consistent, but still, you know, a powerful message, the Dads on Deck podcast, which was started by Dr. Joe Mazza out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania area. And I'm also the co-host of Podcast PD, which I co-host with my friends Stacey Lindis and AJ Bianco.
And of course, you're also the host of House of EdTech.
And of course, the House of EdTech. See, sometimes I forget where I am and, you know, who I'm talking to.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of a big one. You know, that's a big deal. I actually, this past Saturday, I was presenting at a conference on podcasting and as a PD method for teachers and how to use it as PD. And every time I talk about podcasting as professional development, the Edu Podcast Network always comes up because it's one of my favorite ways to find new podcasts when I start to think about like, okay, I need something new because 10 hours a week of podcasts that I listen to obsessively isn't enough. Let's pick up another one. And I pretty much always turn to the Edu Podcast Network to find some new examples. So I think a lot of people find that as a really valuable resource.
That's why I created it. For me, it was, you know, I didn't have the time to, you know, create multiple podcasts of my own. And actually, believe it or not, when I first started, I only did House of EdTech only every 2 weeks, as I've done since its inception. But not having the time to create my own multiple shows, creating the network and building a community of like-minded educators and content creators was the way for me to, I guess, scratch that itch to be involved and connect with other people who were, you know, doing what I was doing, which was being a teacher and creating content to help other teachers.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, do you struggle still? Especially now with you producing so many other shows and helping out with all those things, do you struggle with the time management side of things? Do you struggle with getting the day job done and still having to have that creative gene as well?
Honestly, I don't struggle with it because not to toot my own horn or pat myself on the back, I consider myself to be an endless wealth of creativity. And, you know, when I'm doing something like Google Teacher Tribe or, you know, assist learning, that's not necessarily me having to be the creative one doing the heavy lifting. So that's just me listening to somebody else's conversation and, you know, processing the audio, editing out obvious errors or mistakes or silences and, you know, doing the, you know, the technical aspect of it. You know, I don't have to come up with the ideas. I don't have to book the guests. I just have to take the raw content and, you know, polish it off and, you know, make it something that people want to listen to and consume. So that still frees me up to one, do my own lesson planning and, you know, create a great experience for my high school students, for the college students, and also to develop my own content for my own show.
Yeah, that's nice. I like that you have both sides. I think it's cool to be able to do the production side and be involved in that. And I always, in Google Teacher Tribe especially, I love the high Chris's and the bloopers that make their way into the end of those episodes as well.
What I can safely say is there's a whole lot of other stuff that never even makes it in that is also like sometimes Matt and Casey will be talking about something and then they'll realize, oh, hey, Chris. So there's, you know, in a 35 to 45 minute episode that gets published, I'm dealing with a raw recording that might be, you know, an hour and 10, an hour and a half in length where, you know, they're kind of putting together their content and their conversations and they're just talking. And then they realize, oh, Chris is listening to this.
Yeah, that's interesting. Doing all my own editing and all my own stuff, I don't think about it that way, but it's an interesting thing to kind of feel like there's this third mystical person listening all the time. That's interesting.
And the best part is, you mentioned the bloopers that I put in. They didn't say when we started this whole thing, oh, put bloopers at the end. I just kind of took it upon myself because they're two genuinely funny people when they talk about really anything. And sometimes their Google conversations are pretty funny. So I don't even know where I was going with that.
No, they are. I've actually been lucky enough to have both of them on the show as well. And they're both really great people. And, you know, Casey's book, by the time this releases, will be out, I believe. And, you know, I got lucky enough to get a pre-order copy of that and get to read it in advance. And it's a great book. So, you know, they're both great. They're both awesome people. So I agree. And you're right. The bloopers fit perfectly with that show and is very much their personality.
I remember what I was going to say, and that was only maybe a handful of times in the last, I guess, year or so where they've been recording and they're like, yeah, we know that was funny. Don't let that see the light of day.
But for the most part, now I really want to know what they wanted out.
But for the most part, And I love it when they'll say something like, Oh, great. That's going to go in the bloopers. And sometimes I'll put that stuff in because they expect it. And then other times I'll find weird stuff. Like actually a couple episodes ago, they were talking about, somebody who sent in feedback and they were rapping and the two of them went and did a little rap and Matt tried to drop a beat and he was like, that really wasn't very good. But I took that beat and I actually processed it. So if you may remember the episode where at the end, it's like them like rapping, but I put together a little song.
Yes.
It was fun.
Yeah, it's good. You get to be a little creative and then still go back to your own show and put the effort there.
Oh, that's a lot of creative though.
Which, yeah. That's a lot of creative. You know, I love the House of EdTech because it covers so many things all within the EdTech vein and sort of the main components of the show sticking the same, but letting you go, you know, cover a wide range of topics within EdTech. And I just think it's such a great show for people to listen to for, you know, not to be redundant, but educational technology information. It's my biweekly ready to go. You know, it's always one of the top on my list.
I appreciate that. And, you know, I haven't really changed the core of the show since it started. I think the only real change I've made to an episode is the order in which I do things. And that was from, you know, communicating with my audience and kind of getting that feedback in the same way we would monitor and adjust a lesson with our students. I have made a couple of tweaks to the podcast, but for the most part, it's the same segments, you know, whether it's, you know, an EdTech thought, the VIP, featured content, or the recommendation. Those things have only maybe changed order in the episodes.
That's cool. I've only been listening for about a year and a half or so. So I haven't gone back and listened to the back catalog, but that's cool that it hasn't really changed much. Do you want to change it sometimes? Do you feel like you wish you could do something different, or is that kind of what you're comfortable with?
It's what I'm comfortable with. But again, the way I designed it, you know, when I first set out to plan what my podcast would be, you know, the different things that I looked at and resources, whether it was podcasts about podcasting or, you know, YouTube channels or articles that I was reading, I, in self-teaching myself, learned about having segments that could be regular or irregular, depending if you have content. When I design the segments, again, you mentioned, you know, do I ever feel like I want to change it up? Really, sometimes I wish I had more of a platform to talk general education topics, but because it's my podcast and I can do what I want to, I will use the EdTech thought as a place to put in things that are non-EdTech related, where I can, again, express, you know, my thought or opinion on something in general terms. And then it's also where Podcast PD really, you know, scratches an itch for me because, you know, with Stacey and AJ, we talk about all sorts of topics in education and trying to provide that, you know, anytime, anywhere professional development. So that is a platform that lets me go and do stuff beyond, you know, the latest tech tool or the latest application.
Cool. Yeah. I feel like you're right. I didn't think about it that way, but that Podcast PD gives you that extra flexibility. So I can see where you're kind of scratching both itches, if that makes any sense. You're getting some of that familiarity and having a show with a specific target audience, but then getting to have even more freedom with Podcast PD, which is another great show. You know, I can't compliment your shows enough apparently tonight because they're all on my regular listen list. So I definitely can talk about all of them with some authority, I feel like.
And then even something like, you know, Dads on Deck. I'm not a host on that show. I produce it. But at any given time, I can go record something. So that hits education from a completely different angle and, you know, gives me a platform to talk about, you know, being a parent and a father in education and you know, how that all kind of works. And that's the whole point of that show. I've only done that once, and that's where, you know, AJ and I did a Christmas holiday type episode. But I know that from working with Joe, I can get on the microphone and express thoughts and ideas from that perspective as well.
Yeah, I like it. I have one other thing. You know, you mentioned in your intro that you're from New Jersey, and I'm curious, why does it feel like New Jersey is the heart of connected educators sometimes? Is it just because of all of the shows I listen to on the Edu Podcast Network, or is it just that much more engaged? You know, I asked you and Stacy and AJ for some support in launching an ed camp myself because we have very few of them where I'm at. But it seems like you guys in New Jersey have ed camps, three or four options every weekend, it feels like, from the you guys talking. So why does it feel like New Jersey is sort of the heart of connected education?
Because it is. New Jersey is the best state to be an educator in, hands down. We are nicely located between Philadelphia and New York and, you know, other parts of Pennsylvania and into Connecticut and, you know, New York State. I can't explain it, but again, a lot of the people that would be considered the, and you know, I really dislike the term, but like the edu rock stars, the edu celebrities, so many of these people are rooted right here in New Jersey. I can't explain it, but it's just fact, Brad.
It definitely is. And I don't get it. I don't get it that much, but it does seem to be true. That's for sure.
I mean, I think it helped with something like,
it's like
with like Ed Camp Philly, which was the first Ed Camp. You know, three people who went to that were the ones who were the original co-founders of Ed Camp New Jersey. And, you know, now Ed Camp New Jersey is going to be going into its seventh year. And it is, I'd be hard pressed to find somebody to beat it, but the largest ed camp that takes place in this country, if not the world.
That's cool. I didn't know that. Maybe I need to get up there. I need to do that.
We've had outside.
I need a trip.
So please make the trip.
That's the problem with podcasting. Is I talk to these people all over the world and it's like, well, now I got to go move to Iceland because that sounds awesome. You know, got to go teach in Australia tomorrow because that just would be cool. And then, you know, my son doesn't really want to uproot his entire life and go to Australia or Iceland or Canada or New Jersey. So, you know, that whole parenting thing kicks in.
I will say this, though. I've had the opportunity to go to some other places throughout the country and, you know, meet teachers and see students and see how other schools do it. While, yeah, sometimes the grass does seem greener, it has caused me to really have an even greater appreciation for not only the job I do get paid to do, but even just the opportunities that exist here in this area of the country that don't exist. You know, I was in Utah a couple of weeks ago and, you know, they inconsistently have ed camps, but the conference that I was attending, you know, there we are, you know, like 1800 people who came, but from 4 or 5 hours away. And what we forget is, and even, you know, for you in Florida, so many, all the other states, they're huge. You know, people complain coming to Ed Camp New Jersey if they have to drive an hour and a half. But, you know, are you going to get people from where you are in Florida coming from 2-3 hours away in the same state? Probably not.
Right. Yeah, no, yeah, it's definitely not the people are not willing to travel just because it's in the same state. It does. Does make a difference. You're right.
I mean, some places in some states, you would have to like get on a plane to go to Ed Camp to be in your same state.
Yeah, that would. But then at the same time, there's that population density. Like, so, I mean, we still have enough people in Central Florida that we should be able to support multiple Ed Camps. You know, we have enough people living here, but yet it doesn't seem to happen. And I'm not sure why.
Well, from what it sounds like, you're going to be somebody who's instrumental in changing that.
I hope so. We'll see. That's, you know, it's probably giving me more credit than I deserve because I have a lot of help, but we'll see. Well, Chris, I want to get to my first real question, because as someone who's as connected as you are and in the heart of connected education and involved in ed camps and podcasting and everything else, I'm really curious what your opinion is on this first question. And my question is, what is the biggest problem facing education today?
Wow. Is this a multiple choice or multi-part question?
No, just one open-ended. Like I said, wide open questions here.
I think, and don't get me wrong, there are a lot of problems facing education. But the one aspect that I will focus on is the world that we talk about preparing our students for versus the world that they're actually coming into. And I think in education, we as educators need to do a much better job preparing kids for the world that exists right now. And I mean, as a history teacher, you know, I don't necessarily preach, but we talk about obviously the past, but, and the idea of, you know, history repeats itself. Let's learn from our mistakes. That's why we study historical events. I think today's student needs to have the same opportunity to go out and shape the world themselves. And I think we're getting caught up in a lot of things that, you know, we have adults who haven't been in the classroom in 15, 20, 30 years, who are making decisions that impact the kids of today. And when they get out into the world, and I don't say the real world because the world is real, whether you're a student or the teacher or blue collar, white collar, the world is the world. So we need to do a better job preparing kids to get out into the world, whether it's college ready, whether it's for the career. I think we need to shape education to really meet the needs and desires of the individual students. You know, for example, let's say my own son who's five and, you know, finishing kindergarten, you know, if he, when he gets to first grade, expresses interest in becoming, you know, a firefighter, then, you know, until he changes his mind, give him every opportunity to learn about that, you know, and, you know, let's really hit on students' interests. A really innovative concept and would probably prove to be very difficult. But just imagine what, you know, our own middle and high school experiences would be like had they, you know, looked at me at the age of 16. Oh, Chris Nessie, you want to be a teacher? Let's focus and give you things here in high school that until you tell us otherwise, we're going to help you get to where you want to go. And I think that would really make a difference if we did more of that to really support our students.
You know, I told her I was at a conference this past weekend and the, one of the things the keynote speaker said that I thought was really interesting is we need to stop asking kids, like he was specifically focused on when they come into high school and they're freshmen and asking them, where do they want to go to college? And instead asking them, what do they want to be? And that the paths that can get them there can be really different. And he used the example of driving to a city. He said, you know, there's not only one way to get to a given city. You know, if we want to go to from Orlando to Jacksonville, you know, the plan would probably be to take us, you know, the major highway, but there's lots of back roads and side roads and less major highways that you could take along the path as well. And his point was that not college is not always the path for everyone. It's often the path for many people, but there's lots of other paths out there as well, and we need to consider those. And I think that kind of lines up with what you're saying, that we need to really consider what a student as a person wants to be, and work that into the support and teaching we're giving those students. So I think that's a really powerful message to start out with.
Let me first say that I would even change that question of whoever the keynote speaker is. A question I like to ask people is, what problems do you want to solve in the world? And then when they look at me funny, then I will say, all right, let me ask you the easier question. What do you want to be when you grow up? So if we, I think if we change the question, that will, in a sense, raise the rigor and challenge our kids to really think about what, like you're saying, what do I want to be? What change do I want to make? How do I want to make the world a better place? And I think even if we ask people that question, then we will start to see some change. Because if you just ask people what they want to do, or that translates for a lot of people, how much money do I want to make? You know, what, you know, how many zeros do I need in my paycheck? What, I think that translates too much into what I want to do to get the stuff that I want. And that's a really selfish approach. So by changing the question, I think you really will then start to see a shift in how these students will interact and view the world that they're going to be living in. And definitely, you know, to your point, college is not for everybody, and that's not a bad thing. You know, I wonder if in 25 or 30 years, you know, will we still have electricians? Will we still have plumbers? And sometimes I wonder if we're getting kids who might be perfectly suited to go into the vocational trades and, you know, can make decent money and still have, you know, their house and their family and make a great living. You know, everything seems like, hey, got to get you into that 4-year college, 4-year university, which I think right now just translates into, hey, let's help out all these banks and lending institutions with all the debt you're going to incur, because not everybody gets a scholarship.
Yes, I definitely. I wonder sometimes how much of an impact the needs of a bank are impacting how we teach education.
Everybody's got a lobbyist. Everybody has a lobbyist.
Yeah, that's true. The other thing you said is you said the world we talk about preparing our kids for compared to the world they actually go into. And I'm wondering, who's the we in there? Because at first I thought you meant maybe we are preparing them for something too far in the future. But as you talked more, I don't think that's quite what you meant. So you said the world we talk about preparing our kids for versus the world they go into. Can you explain that disconnect a little bit more in your mind?
Well, first, let me clarify. That's speaking to that statement you'll see thrown around about, you know, we need to prepare our kids for the jobs that don't exist yet. Well, those jobs don't exist yet. Those kids will discover what they are. How are we as teachers discovering these jobs and, you know, knowing what skills are going to translate 20 or 30 years from now? Most of us right now listening to this are going to be dead. not to get morbid, but we're going to be long gone. And, you know, let's not worry about the jobs that don't exist. Let's worry about giving kids skills and knowledge and being good critical thinkers and being able to ask questions and really spark a desire for learning, true learning, life, actual lifelong learning, to be able to, when I can't figure something out, I know how to go and conduct quality research or solve my problem. You know, from my own experience, I'm not an electrician or a plumber. But if not for YouTube, I would have flooded a basement, a bathroom, or electrocuted myself long ago. Did I always know how to do these things and, you know, do the DIY stuff I do around the house here? Not at all. But to have that built-in inquisitive nature and belief that I can do something and to know how to go out and find information, that's helped a lot. So to put that into students, that's going to prepare them for the stuff that we can only imagine. You know, you look at somebody like a Steve Jobs, and, you know, some people will get down on Apple for not really being innovative in the last decade, you know, and even then people will say, you know, the iPhone wasn't that innovative. Other stuff existed like it before it. Apple just really did a nice job selling it. So how do we get kids to be innovative? They need to have less to do. And I don't mean that in a let's make school easy, but let's not take up all their time and give them all this unnecessary pressure to perform and, you know, do the tests and, you know, go to college. You know, where is their downtime? You know, even for us as adults, you know, to daydream and not just kind of be going along like mindless drones, you know?
No, I agree. And I think that also touches on, So first of all, I appreciate the clarification, because that is kind of where I thought you were going, but I just wanted to make sure we're on the same page. But I also think it connects to that idea, and I forget who I was listening to today on their podcast, but talking about the value of being bored, and that we don't allow ourselves or our students to be bored. We're trying to fill every single second of their class time. You know, we often hear that idea of teach bell to bell, teach bell to bell, teach bell to bell. That's how you deal with, you know, behavior issues and classroom management, is bell to bell. And we're not allowing ourselves or our students to be bored and allow for that creative process to kick in, it feels like.
Let me just say this. As you were talking, the phrase bell to bell popped into my head, and then you said it. So kudos on that one. But I'll be honest, again, just my opinion, teaching bell to bell does not reduce behavior issues. Designing engaging lessons handles behavior issues. And let's say you teach in an 80-minute block. I can design an engaging lesson that might be 65 to 70 minutes. I see no problem with, again, like I would create a podcast episode, only make the lesson as long as it needs to be. And then stop the lesson. Don't drag it out. Don't make, you know, 60 minutes of content or lecture or activity take 80 minutes if it doesn't have to, because then you're going to see disengagement, and then you're dealing with other discipline issues for kids who, you know, they've checked out. To get a little tech, you know, kids' attention spans are ever shrinking. you know, our own attention spans are ever shrinking. I mean, think of, you know, you and I both as podcast listeners. Do we both listen to podcasts probably faster than 1x? Sure, because we want to consume as much good content as we can in the shortest amount of time possible. So I think that relates to everything I was saying. You tell me, you're
the host. No, I do. No, I agree with you. Yeah. And actually, I've just recently started doing the more than 1x thing because it actually drives me insane. I'm starting to get used to it. I just can't stand not hearing natural sound because I know that's not in my mind. I know what I want my show to sound like, and I'm building it to sound like it is at 1x, not at 1.5. But I am starting to do that just because of the amount of podcasts I listen to. I'm being left with little choice. Besides either that or dropping some, but even then I'm not willing to drop them. I want to consume that content and I want to consume it quickly. And I'm not going to just sit around and turn my phone off and stare off into space and think for a few minutes because I don't have time for that. I've got 9 million other things to do. At least in my head, that's how it feels. And I think it's even more true for students. The second you give them a downtime, most of them pull out their phones. And so as someone who's also very ed tech heavy and tech centric, you know, I am intentional with my own son to make sure he doesn't always have something in front of him. And I say, sometimes I'm like, no, you know what? You're on your, like, he's like, can you play with me, daddy? I'm like, I've been playing with you for the last like 2 hours. You're going to play by yourself for a little bit, figure something out. He goes, well, what am I supposed to do? I go, I don't know. You have toys, figure it out. And I think that's something that's often missing in a lot of our students and a lot of our children, because they're just kind of going straight to the next thing because there's such easy access and constant access to tech, to entertainment and something to keep your mind occupied, that we're not letting our minds wander and be bored. And that's where that innovation and that creativity and that problem solving comes from, is letting your mind mull over something.
And I think we have to, you know, whether you, as a parent or as a teacher, you know, for your own children or your students, I think part of our responsibility needs to be build in that forced downtime and that forced nothing going on. You know, I mean, even us as adults, there are times where, sure, we can get caught up in, you know, our own screens and our own devices and our own activities. You have to be intentional about doing nothing sometimes. And sometimes you have to schedule nothing, like literally on your Google Calendar or, you know, wherever you schedule stuff. You know, block out some time for nothing and put it on there. It's only going to be to your benefit to really clear your mind and, you know, not do anything. Close your eyes, daydream. It's not that difficult. Just give it a try. See what I did there?
I love it. Yeah, I love it. I love it. Because you slipped into your voice too. Like, I don't know if that even makes any sense, but you say it with the same cadence and it fell right into it. So yeah. I like it. I'm all about it. Oh, cool. Yeah, that's great. We'll just, you know, non sequitur directly into my next question, because I think that's a good way to wrap it up. My second question for all my guests is, what is something you're doing that you wish all other teachers would?
Podcast. Next question. No,
well, you got me. I'm on board.
I say that in jest, and yet I also say it seriously. But while my big thing is, you know, I love to present and talk about podcasting and, you know, going through the creative process, because I truly believe that podcasting is a great way to kind of be creative and do so much, whether it's for yourself or with your students. But in a broader sense, I think more people need to take time and put something out there, which is part of why I got into this in the first place. I got tired of being a retweeter and just a share and consumer, you know, being somebody who was just taking and just sharing out what other people were doing. And that kind of aggravated me because I felt that, you know, I had a perspective and I wanted to share that. And I consider myself to be a creative person, and everybody to some degree is also creative, but creativity is like a muscle where the more creative things you do, the more creative you can get. And I think more people need to create, whether it's a podcast, YouTube, a blog, you know, put yourself out there. You know, sure, maybe you feel like George McFly, you know, what if they don't like me? What if they tell me I'm no good? All right. You know, there are going to be haters. You know, Taylor Swift said it best, you know, haters gonna hate, hate, hate. And that's as much as I'm going to sing from Taylor Swift today. But, you know, put yourself out there. And it doesn't have to be about education. You know, there are a number of ideas and things that I would love to, you know, podcast about or write about that have nothing to do with education. Right now, I just don't have the time. But that doesn't mean I'm not keeping a Google Doc with all these ideas of things I'd like to do. And at some point, I'll go and tackle some things on that list. So whether it's creating a podcast about education technology or any other topic in education, try it. I mean, you have nothing to lose, or writing about it or blogging about it, or just, I mean, go out and take pictures with your phone. Most people listening to this right now, you've got your $400 or $500 phone that's got a great camera. Hey, when you're done listening to this and you've rated it and reviewed it and you've told all your friends to subscribe to this podcast, go out and use the camera and take pictures. And you don't necessarily have to post them on Instagram. Take pictures, mess around with it yourself. You know, use a tool like Pixlr on the web, or, you know, get Photoshop, or mess around with what's on your phone. Just exercise that creativity. And you know, maybe you publish it. Maybe you tweet about it. Maybe you put it on Instagram. But just put something out there. That's what I think more people need to do. Be creative and put their creations out in the world.
Perfect. Mic drop. Moving on. No, I agree with you. Obviously, as a podcaster myself, I obviously believe in the value of creating and putting things out there. I'm curious, what benefits do you bring back to the classroom from your own creative endeavors? What comes back to your classroom? Because, I mean, especially if you were to say someone who's not necessarily doing a creation on education. So I think the easy stuff is to say, well, I talk to great education people in ed tech because of your podcast. But in terms of not the direct, because of the content of your podcast, but just the creative process itself.
I would say some of these soft and hard skills that come out of it are, one, you know, by going through the process, that like the technical part of putting together a podcast episode or maintaining a website. Those are things that I can freely have conversations about with students to say, hey, sure, you might feel like you don't know anything right now, but, you know, if this is something you're interested in, you can certainly learn about it. And here's my experience, you know, whether I show them, you know, the back end of WordPress, or, you know, I go on and I show them how to use Audacity, or, you know, use basic video editing. You know, I bring that into the classroom and can say to them, not just, hey, go be creative and you know, you guys need to be creative, but I can lead by example, and I can share my own experiences and my own stories about what I've learned and what I have done and what I'd like to do. And I think that's much more authentic than just getting up and, you know, for example, just talking about history, or, you know, just doing a lesson on geometric proofs. Then to be able to say, here's what I'm doing, I'm not afraid to do it. So here, you know, again, give it a try.
Have you had those moments with your students where they stumble across your Twitter account, or they realize sort of who you are, in a sense of like, wait, what, you, how do you, how, who, that you're just a teacher. How does that happen? Have you had any of those moments?
No, they don't care. I
really, because I do have those a lot, even with my minimal success. I have them a lot with my kids.
K-12, no. When I'm working with the kids at Rutgers and I talk about, you know, using Twitter and leveraging social media, you know, for personal branding, and then I have them, you know, follow me because I do a lot of the conversations and discussions via Twitter, and also using things like Voxer, you know, they will go to follow me and they're like, oh, you're kind of a big deal. But I get that more at the college level. And again, that's me being able to say, yes, sure, but I'm still just a guy. I'm a teacher, but here's how I'm leveraging social media in my profession. And here's how you can, whether you want to be a social media marketer or work in PR, or you're, you know, an IT major, you know, you can also leverage these technologies professionally. So that's my message there. And they give me that in terms of like, oh, wow, you're really something.
Yeah. Hmm. The other thing I always think about, and I feel like I bring into my practice from being creative outside of work, is as an English teacher, especially, I found this to be true, is I actually felt like I understood the struggle of what our students were going through so much better. Even with something like essay writing on a standardized test or something like that, there's always this pressure to create. You have to write something from nothing. You have to create something from nothing. And I ask them to write poetry in class, or I ask them to do whatever. And I felt like it always gave me an extra layer of authority to be able to say, no, no, I know what you're going through. I put this out there for the entire world to hear. I'm only asking you to say it for the 25 kids in the class. And I felt like that always gave me an extra authority, but also just a better, you know, sort of empathy for my students, where I understood, like, I understand this is hard. I'm asking you to do something hard. Because even writing a blog post about something that happened to me can be a challenge sometimes. And that's just telling a story. And I do that every day. And so I get their struggle. And I feel like sometimes teachers don't always appreciate that, and that I do because of my own process.
Well, actually, that kind of brings up for me that I try to push my kids right off that ledge of, you know, the 25 people in this room, we're not just your audience. So I try to design projects and things that I can, you know, tweet about or share about, you know, appropriately, you know, with the world. And I'm notorious for emailing the principal, the VPs, the superintendent to say, here's what my kids are doing. Come and check it out. You know, we're doing a cultural expo, or, you know, we're doing these presentations. So that gives, you know, the administrator some face time with the kids, and, you know, I can build right into my students that, hey, you're not just creating for me or my in-class support teachers. You know, I'm trying to give you a bigger audience than just our class that meets from this time to this time.
Perfect. Yeah. And again, your experience in reaching out to that larger audience can only be a boon to them as well. Well, Chris, I'm going to go into my third question here. And this is, in my opinion, the easiest one. I start with the hardest, and then we work our way down from there. So my third question for all of my guests is, who is the best teacher you have ever had?
The best teacher I ever had? That truly is an easy question. So thank you for asking that question. The best teacher I ever had was my high school English teacher and drama director at Spotswood High School, located in the heart of central New Jersey. And that is Mrs. Marianne Cochran. Mrs. Cochran was somebody who I first met when I was in the eighth grade before I got to high school. And we connected via musical theater and the dramatic arts. And she is somebody who, to this day, if I had to have a different mother, Mrs. Cochran would choose her to be my mom. That's how much of an impact she had on me and pushed me to, you know, not just settle for being good, but to exceed that. And she is somebody who is present with me every day. She's still with us, so she's not gone. But she is somebody who I think about very often when, you know, when I'm creating the podcast or when I'm designing lessons or standing up in front of a class. I pull from my experiences with her almost on a daily basis. And she is just somebody who truly means the world to me. She has since retired, and she is no longer making that positive impact for kids. But, you know, we exchange Christmas cards. So, I mean, an easy question, yet leaves me a little speechless on my words, but definitely that's that teacher for me. Absolutely.
Have you had the opportunity to tell her that out of curiosity, since she is still with us?
Oh, yeah. I mean, from the day I graduated high school to, you know, crying and, you know, not wanting to leave high school to, you know, going back and seeing the plays, she knows full well where she stands with me.
That's good. And, you know, you said she's not having that impact, but she is. I mean, she's having that impact if you are carrying on what it was that made her so important to you.
Yeah. As I said that out loud, I realized, yeah, she's still making an impact because she's kind of going through me now. And, you know, I put my own spin on, you know, who she was as an educator.
Our profession is, it can be easy sometimes, I feel like, to get wrapped up and lost in some of the negatives and some of the things that aren't going right, or maybe going right, but just aren't going fast enough. And it's, I think, important and powerful to take a moment to consider those things that are going so well. And if we can all have a legacy like Ms. Cochran, I feel like we'll probably be doing a pretty good job.
Oh yeah. And I've said since, you know, probably day one that I wanted to, you know, do this, that, the effective teacher is the reflective teacher, you know, good, bad, or indifferent. When we reflect on our practice, you know, something goes right and we think about why it went right and how we can continue to make it go right. Or if something doesn't go according to plan, how can we improve upon that? You know, that's the true recipe for success. And really in anything, whether you're a teacher, plumber, it doesn't matter to me. If you are reflective in what you do and you always want to learn and improve, again, you can't go wrong.
Absolutely. I think that's probably a great place to wrap it up. We talked about podcasting. That's a reflective practice. Even creating is probably a reflective practice. And I think that's probably a best place to wrap it up. So, Chris, I really appreciate you joining me on the show today. One last time for my audience, how can they reach out to you? How can they find you if they want to find out more about what you're up to?
I am on Twitter. I am at Mr. Nessie, MRNESI. And of course, I host a primary show, the House of EdTech podcast, which anybody can go and find at chrisnessie.com. And yeah, I mean, go check out Podcast PD over at podcastpd.com. Check out the Education Podcast Network at edupodcastnetwork.com. And I would love to connect with everybody who listens to this, whether you agree with me or not. I'm about connecting and learning and growing. And the best way to do that is to talk to other people.
Absolutely. I second that as well. Chris, thank you again. I really appreciate you talking to me tonight.
My pleasure, Brad. Thanks so much for having me.
Chris, thank you so much for being on the show. You were so honest and open, which brought a great voice to my show. I really appreciate it. If you want to connect with Chris, you can find him on Twitter. He's at Mr. Nessie. He's also at chrisnessie.com, podcastpd.com, edupodcastnetwork.com. He's a little all over the place. All the links are in the show notes, so check those out. If you have comments or questions about the show, you can always connect with me on Twitter. I'm at Brad Treffler, and I'm also now on Instagram at Brad Treffler as well. I'd love to hear from you over there. I'm actually posting a lot of stuff to Instagram, kind of behind the scenes stuff, so that may be something you might want to check out. There's also a great place to connect with me if you'd like to be a guest on the show, either on Twitter or Instagram as well. Or you can check out the feedback page on my website that I have set up now, which gives you some different options for feedback there. You can find that at bradtreffler.com/feedback. And as always, links that are in the show notes. Until next week, ask your students, what problems do they want to solve when they grow up? Music for the Planning Period podcast is the song Vicious by Kevin MacLeod, used under Creative Commons. You can find him at incompetech.com. The Planning Period podcast is also a proud member of the VoiceEd Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. VoiceEd Radio, your voice is right here.